Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Thus, the Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. There are innumerable material universes, and in each and every universe, there are innumerable planets inhabited by different grades of living entities in different modes of nature. The Lord, Vishnu, incarnates himself in each and every one of them and in each and every type of living society. He manifests his transcendental pastimes amongst them just to create the desire to go back to Godhead. The Lord does not change his original transcendental position, but he appears to be differently manifested according to the particular time, circumstances, and society. Shishi Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shishi Gornatai Ki Jai. Sometimes he incarnates himself or empowers a suitable living being to act for him, but in either case the purpose is the same. The Lord wants the suffering living being to go back home, back to Godhead. The happiness which the living beings are hankering for is not to be found within any corner of the innumerable universes and material planets. The eternal happiness which the living being wants is obtainable in the kingdom of God, but the forgetful living beings under the influence of the material modes have no information of the kingdom of God. The Lord, therefore, comes to propagate the message of the kingdom of God either personally as an incarnation or through his bona fide representative as the good Son of God. Such incarnations or sons of God are not making propaganda for going back to Godhead only within the human society. Their work is also going on in all types of societies, amongst demigods and those other than human beings. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Vabhyatyesha Satvena Lokanvai Lokabhavana Lilavatara Nurato Devatiryanaradishu. Thus the Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. So, Sudha Goswami speaking. It's explained that the general way self-realized souls and Krishna himself approach things, when they want to say something, they make their point very concisely, then they expand on that point elaborately, and then at the end they make the point very concisely again. And you can see in all the various conversations and teachings in the Bhagavatam and in different Vedic literatures, that's the general way that they do. So the second chapter of the Bhagavatam is Sutta Goswami's concise summary of the science of God realization. And again, as we study different cantos and different pastimes in the Bhagavatam, we'll find that they're making a specific point. And you can see Sutta Goswami's already made that point in the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. So the whole thing is this chapter is very concise. It's the summary of the whole teachings. And the last six verses from verse 28 essentially explain how Krishna manifests the material world, how he implants the living entities into the material world, and how he arranges for their liberation. The whole thing is explained. So, it's not so easy to understand. It's not so easy to understand because it's described that the river flows towards the ocean. So when the river flows into the ocean, then that river becomes the ocean. And they give that example of merging into the Supreme. that the impersonalists, we say, they have that attitude that, like, the water of a river becomes one with the water of the ocean. So, become one with the supreme in that way. But as well as that, there are fish that live in the ocean. So the water is part of the ocean, but are the fish not also part of the ocean? They are. Now, if you go to the ocean, you won't find just one type of fish. You'll find unlimited varieties of fish, different sizes, shapes, colors, different types, crustaceans, even mammals live there. You have whales and dolphins, you have mammals living in the ocean. There's so many varieties of life in the ocean. But you can't say that none of them are bona fide ocean dwellers. But if you're going to study each one of them, you'll find they're all different. So, similarly, when a living entity is individual by nature. Each spark of the Supreme is individual by nature. So in this world, we find everybody's individual. Like in terms of the body, no two bodies are the same. Even if you have identical twins, their fingerprints are different, isn't it? So nobody's the same. The reason nobody's the same is because spiritually, although everybody is the same, everybody is a unique individual. So for each one of us to engage in Krishna consciousness, our realization of Krishna is going to be different. You see, all the acharyas, they have, like, even across different sampradayas, different people have different opinions and different realizations. But they're bona fide realizations if they're in line with guru, sadhu, and shastra. But even within our own lineage, you'll find our acharyas have different moods and different realizations of the supreme. But they're all bona fide. But the sages, when they wrote the Vedic literatures, what they've done is that they've expressed the Vedic literatures in a way that accommodates every living entity's bona fide realization. So how can you do that, you know? That's like a godly feat to do that, because in our own experience, like if you go on the internet, nobody just agrees with anybody. Nobody will accept anybody's point of view. They're all like arguing and fighting, and that's bogus, that's not right, this is the only way. Even within one temple, you have fights between departments about this is the way you should do it and that's not the way you should do it. So how the sages have expressed themselves in a way to accommodate everybody's spiritual realization, it's an amazing thing. And it's only by the power of Krishna that it's been possible, because Krishna is empowering these rishis and sages to express the truth in this way. So the point I'm trying to make is that the verses in this chapter, when you go into the verse, you can skim over them, you know, no problem, it's grand, it's all right. But if you actually try to understand the thing, what's being said, it's not so easy. Even with the purports and the explanations of the acharyas, it's not so easy. And there's a little example in here, which I think is nice in this verse. Like the classic example for one verse having different meanings for us is the Atmarama verse in the Bhagavad Gita, that Mahaprabhu gave 64 different explanations of one verse, how it can be understood in different ways. So in this verse, just a little one. It says, Deva Tiryan Naradishu, Lila Avatar Anurato, Deva Tiryan Naradishu. So Lila Avatar is how Krishna manifests himself for his pastimes. Lila Avatar Anurato is explaining how Krishna comes into the world and manifests himself in different forms for his pastimes. Deva Tiryan Naradishu means demigods, lower animals, human beings, etc. So in the translation, Prabhupada says that assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. So he says, assuming the roles of incarnations, but he says that he's the maintainer of all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. So there's unlimited planets, and they're full of demigods, men, other species of life. And then Krishna comes as incarnations. But in the purport at the end, Prabhupada says that such incarnations or sons of God are not making propaganda for going back to Godhead only within the human society. Their work is also going on in all types of societies, amongst demigods and those other than human beings. So he's making the point that Krishna manifests as incarnations in demigod society, human society, and societies other than human beings. And he's mentioned animals in the verse. So we like to restrict things according to our conception of life, don't we? We like to fit things into our conception. But Krishna consciousness is not like that. Like, generally speaking, it's said that only the human form of life you can realize God. But then if that's the case, then why is Krishna manifesting in animal species? Because the soul is not, the soul is transcendental to all designations. There are no material obstacles to attaining Krishna consciousness. So actually, we shouldn't be put off by form, name and form in the material world. Because Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. Krishna himself manifested as a fish and as a tortoise. So what I'm trying to say is, I was reading a book reading a book recently. It's Vishakha Devi's book. I don't know if anyone's read it. It's a really good, really good read. But there's a couple of really nice points in there. One thing she said that was when she was coming to Krishna consciousness, she was coming from an atheistic background. So she had trouble accepting the first time she heard that God lifted up a hill with his little finger. You know, she said, okay, right, don't know about that. Then she also had trouble accepting that a fetus in the womb could become self-realized. Prahlad Maharaj, when he was in the womb, he was a fetus. Because a fetus, it doesn't have developed senses, mind, or intelligence. So how can it realize God? So she was, you know, she was saying that when she was coming to Krishna consciousness, she was kind of skeptical about these things. But that's the whole point, actually, of that pastime, is that Prahlad realized the truth in the womb. Because in the womb, you don't have intelligence. You don't have developed intelligence. You don't have developed mind. You don't have developed senses. But still, there's a soul there, so consciousness is there. So the nature of the transmission of spiritual knowledge is that Krishna in the heart of the speaker is speaking to Krishna in the heart of the listener. And if Krishna desires, then the fire of Krishna consciousness awakens in the heart of the listening living entity. Yam prabhrajantam anupetam apeta kritam dvaipayano virahakatara ajuhava putreti tanmayataya taravobine dustam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanato smi. It's the very first verse that Suta Goswami speaks. I offer my respectful obeisances unto that sage, Sukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, O my son, indeed only the trees which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation echoed in response to the bereaved father. So it's a famous verse in the Bhagavatam that Vyasadeva, his son was Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami was born and he just left home straight away. He was a renunciate. So Vyasadeva called after him, O my son. He had this bodily identification that he's the son, I'm the father. And it said, only the trees echoed in response to the bereaved father. So it's usually taken in the way of like poetry that, you know, he's so just on his own in the forest, he called out, O my son, and then the echo came back because nobody else was there. But actually the acharyas give a different commentary on it, that what happened was Vyasadeva called after Sukadeva Goswami, O my son, and Sukadeva Goswami entered into the hearts of the trees, because it says, Tam sarva bhuta hridayam. Sukadeva Goswami can enter into the heart of any living entity. So he entered into the hearts of the trees, and he answered his father through the form of the trees. And then his father realized what level of advancement his son was on. He's thinking, oh, I was thinking he's my son, but this person has gone beyond the body. He's called Jivan Mukta. Although we look at him and we think he's got a body, but he doesn't have a body. And throughout the Bhagavatam, there's so many stories like that. The Navayogendras in the 11th canto, when they come to speak to Maharaj Nimi, he sees them approaching from the sky, and they take a form suitable to this world in order to speak to him. So you are looking at them, and we think they've got a particular body, but they don't have a body. That's why we're looking at a pure devotee. But a pure devotee has gone beyond the body. He doesn't have any body. He's not embodied anymore. But from our point of view, we're looking at him and we think he's, you know, from a particular place, a particular gender, you know, this type of thing. But he doesn't have a body. The soul, the self-realized soul, is not conditioned by the body. So Prahlad Maharaj is explained that the four Kumaras, when they cursed Jaya and Vijaya had to take birth as demons. And then in the Hiranyakashipu Leela, the four Kumaras combined and entered the body of Prahlad. It's explained like that in some Puranas. But one way or the other, Prahlad Maharaj is not an ordinary living entity. So when Narada Muni spoke to Prahlad, it was Krishna in the heart of Narada speaking to Krishna in the heart of Prahlad. And that's what's called parampara, parampara system. Parampara system means when Krishna in the heart of the guru speaks to Krishna in the heart of the disciple. That was explained a few verses ago, that then the fire of the spiritual master ignites the fire within the wood-like living entity. It means Krishna is awakened in the heart. So when Krishna is awakened in the heart, we transcend our bodily identification. And we come to realize that this thing that we call jiva, is a false thing. It's a temporary thing. Jiva means the sum total of our existence in this world, means jiva, our body, our mind, our intelligence, our feelings, our likes and our dislikes, our fears, our anxieties. It's all called jiva, jiva bhuta. This body means the physical body, the subtle body, the psychology, the whole psychological body. It's all called jiva. And this jiva is an obstacle, because this thing called jiva is a temporary thing. And not only is it temporary, it's getting in the way of our Krishna consciousness. We have to understand the point very carefully. Generally speaking, people shout Mayavad and run away when you say something like that. But everything has to have evidence. Mother Jintamani was making the point the other day in the class, there's evidence, there has to be evidence for everything. So this is our evidence in our parampara, Prabhupada's purports. Guru Sadhu Shastra. So Shastra can be understood in so many ways, but if we want to be faithful to a particular lineage, then we have to go through Guru and Sadhu and through the Acharyas. So Prabhupada says in the... Where am I? Chapter 15, text 16 of the Bhagavad Gita. Dvav imo purusho loke ksharas chakshara evacha. Kshara sarvani bhutani kutasto kshara uchate. It's this thing called kshara and akshara. Kshara means fallible. Akshara means infallible. Translation is, there are two classes of beings, the fallible and the infallible. In the material world, every living entity is fallible. And in the spiritual world, every living entity is called infallible. In the purport, Prabhupada says, the living entities are eternally separated parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When they are in contact with the material world, they are called jiva bhuta. And the Sanskrit words given here, kshara sarvani bhutani, mean that they are fallible. Those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, are called infallible. So when the living entities, when they're in contact with the material world, they're called jiva bhuta. So this thing called jiva is something that a false identity that we've taken upon ourselves, this body, this mind, this identity. All our relations within this world, how we relate to different other living beings in this world. It's all called jiva, jiva bhuta. But later on in the 18th chapter, Krishna says, Brahma bhuta prasanatma nasochiti nakankshati sama sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So the soul can be jiva bhuta or Brahma bhuta. So jiva means jiva bhuta. Now, when that same soul attains the Brahma-bhuta platform, Brahma-bhuta means to be liberated in oneness with the Supreme, means you regain your spiritual identity. Krishna says, para-bhakti, labhate Brahma-bhuta prasanatman sochati nakankshati samasarveshu bhuteshu mad-bhaktim labhate param. So, in the liberated stage, then para-bhakti comes. Now, bhakti means two. There has to be two, because there has to be relationship between the servitor and the served. So between Krishna and the individual soul, there has to be, if there's bhakti, it means there has to be distinction. So he said, distinction means jiva, means maya. Spiritual realization means you become one with Krishna. But then within that oneness, then you do bhakti, which means distinction again. So Mahaprabhu has said, achintya beda abeda tattva, simultaneously, inconceivably, one and different at the same time. So Krishna says, mame vamsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana. So sanatana means eternal. So you think jiva bhuta sanatana means that the jiva bhuta is eternal. But it can't mean that, because Prabhupada says that the jiva bhuta means, when you're in contact with the material world, you're jiva bhuta. Then when you become liberated, you're Brahma bhuta. So the point that's made is that it's mama eva amsha. Amsha means a part. In our case, it's separated part and parcel. Part and parcel means it's part of that thing. Separated means it's different. So simultaneously, we're parts of Krishna and separated from Krishna. So mama eva amsha jiva loke. In the world of jivas, we're called jiva bhuta, but actually the amsa, the part and parcel of Krishna, is eternal. But the jiva is not eternal, because everything about the jiva is changing. Your body is changing. Your mind is changing. Your conditions in life are changing. Your attitudes to life are changing. And then just like that, you're gone and you're dead. And then you have to change the whole thing to a new body. And that's constantly changing. That's called jiva bhuta. But the amsa is eternal, it doesn't change. The soul doesn't change. And that's why Lord Chaitanya begins his teachings, Chaito Darpana Marjanam. We don't have to try and get anything new. We don't have to add anything to our existence. Our function in spiritual practice is to remove the baggage, the excess baggage that we don't need. Chaito Darpana Marjanam. We're supposed to get rid of all the false identities, the false identifications, and come to the platform of realization. So the point is that the soul itself, the soul itself is not, it's a non-material particle, it's a spiritual particle. So Krishna has an arrangement to reawaken the soul to its original spiritual position. So, it's said a few verses earlier, Vasudeva, there's a verse with loads of Vasudevs in it. Vasudeva Paraveda, Vasudeva Paramakaha, Vasudeva para yoga, Vasudeva para kriya, Vasudeva param jnanam, Vasudeva param tapaha, Vasudeva paro dharmo, Vasudeva para gati. It's saying that it's the essence of all existence is Vasudeva. And this point comes up again and again in the Shastra. Vasudeva sarvam iti in the Bhagavad Gita. Everything, sarvam, everything is Vasudeva. In the Bhagavata, mahame vasameva grey. Krishna's logic is different from our logic. Krishna says that in the beginning there was only Narayan existed, only Vasudeva existed. And at the end, only Vasudeva will exist. So therefore, in the middle, we may see that different things exist, but actually, nothing else can exist except Krishna. Just like if you have gold, and then that gold is formed by a jeweler or whoever makes ornaments, he transforms that gold into bracelets, necklaces, rings. We say, oh, that's a necklace, that's a ring, that's a bracelet. But then he melts it all down again and there's only gold. So in the beginning there was only gold. At the end, only gold existed. Therefore, in the middle, we may call it bracelet or necklace or whatever, according to the form, we give it a name. But actually the only thing that's existing is gold. Similarly, we may look around the world and say, man, woman, animal, planet, stars, you know, good, bad, happy, distressed. We give it that name. Krishna doesn't give it that name. That's the name we give it according to nama rupa, name and form. According to our conception of life, we give things different names. That's not Krishna's logic, that's our logic. But what we do in Krishna consciousness is that we try to project our logic onto Krishna. You know, we think Krishna sees the world the same way we see the world, but Krishna doesn't see the world anyway the same as what we do. Like Krishna, like we think death is such a big thing. Krishna doesn't think that way at all. Dehino sminyata dehe komaram yovanam jara. Krishna, from Krishna's point of view, you're changing your body all the time, but you're a pure spirit soul, you got nothing to do with this. And then you take another body. When this body is worn out, you take another body. That's all it is. Whereas we lament, and we put pictures up to remember that person, and then we have annual ceremonies, you know, for years and years and years together, holding on to that jiva identity. The jiva's gone. The jiva's burned and thrown in the Ganges or buried in the ground and eaten by worms. It's gone. The body's gone. That identity is gone. So Krishna doesn't see in the same way we see. So sometimes it's said that we should... We have to understand the oneness and the difference. So we say that Krishna is different from us. Krishna is different from us in the conditioned state. But then in the spiritual sense, we have to understand also our simultaneous identity with Krishna. Because in the jiva state, we're seeing ourselves as different. But in the Brahma-Bhuta state, we have to see ourselves that our identity is godly, spiritual. Because if we don't accept that we're parts of Krishna, then there's no way to go beyond the Hindu religion. Like, this was my experience anyway, coming to Krishna consciousness, there was something inside which was, you know, resonating with me. But then I had trouble with the form of Krishna, because Prabhupada is always saying Krishna is not just a Hindu god. But when you're looking externally, you're looking at culture and you're looking at society and you're thinking that, this, well, I didn't grow up with Krishna. It's all right if somebody has been taught about Krishna from their birth, but to me it's a new kind of new concept and all that. It's coming from ignorance, that idea. Because actually Krishna means what you are is a part of Krishna. So unless we accept our divinity, there's no meaning to bhakti, actually. Like in the class yesterday, Prabhupada was explaining that we shouldn't be satisfied to just stay on the Prakriti Bhakta platform. We should try and come to the higher level. Higher level. Progress through the different stages. Nishta, Ruchi, Bhava, Asakti, Prema. That's what we're supposed to do. Because our actual identity is that. You know, our identity is not to be a religious person in the world and hold on to all our anxieties, hold on to our desires and fears and all that type of thing. So we need to understand the philosophy properly in order to come to the platform of devotional service. So Krishna has explained that the only thing that exists is Krishna, is him, Vasudev. Then the next verse, he says, verse 30, he says, Sa evedam sasardra gre bhagavan atma mayaya sadasad rupayacha so gunamaya guno vibhu. In the beginning of the material creation, the absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudev, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. So the question is, if everything is Krishna, then how is it, like, what is this material world? How does the world come? So, again, what Sudha Goswami is doing is giving his own understanding of the four seed verses, the Chatur Shloki in the Bhagavatam. Because the first verse is that only Krishna exists. The second verse is that that which appears to be truth without me, you should know to be my illusory energy. Shishirada Gokulananda Kijai. So, by understanding what is the illusory energy, he says, Bhagavan Atma Mayaya. Bhagavan means Krishna. So Krishna has manifested Atma Maya from his own energy. Atma means his own personal energy. He's manifested this world. So we think this world is separate from Krishna, but actually this world is not separate from Krishna. It's not separate from Krishna because it's manifested from Krishna's energies. And the nature of this world is Sad Asad Rupaya. He created the energies of cause and effect. Cause and effect. So we always want to know the question, well, not all of us, and not always, but, you know, it's a popular question. How, you know, did we fall from the spiritual world? How did we fall? When did we come here? What's our original position? You know, did we originate in the material world? Did we originate in the spiritual world? Now, the problem with that question is that that question comes from ignorance. Because the material world is a manifestation of avidya. It's Krishna's power of ignorance to bewilder living entities. That's how this world comes. And this world is created, it's manifested with Sat Asat Rupaya, the energies of cause and effect. The whole conception of cause and effect only exists in the material world. So what we're doing is that we're taking a concept of ignorance, that every effect has to have a cause, and we're trying to find the absolute cause for our ignorance. But there is no absolute cause, because in the absolute there's no cause and effect. In the absolute there's Sat Chit Ananda, there's eternal existence, knowledge and bliss. The concept of when did I become conditioned, it only arises in the conditioned state. It only arises in ignorance. So because it only arises in ignorance, it means the question is wrong. It's not a valid question to say, when did I fall? Because you're not fallen. Only the jiva is fallen. The atma is not fallen. The atma never comes in contact with the material energy. Only by the bewilderment of Krishna's external energy, the atma thinks he's jiva. And the jiva is asking the question, when did I become conditioned? So the answer is that the jiva has always been conditioned, because the jiva is a conditioned entity. But then the atma is eternally liberated, because the atma never comes in contact. So the jiva is asking the question about the atma, but the jiva has no qualification to ask the question about the atma, because the jiva is in ignorance and the atma is pure. So the point is to destroy the jiva bhuta. In the Bhagavatam, after Krishna meets the gopis in Kurukshetra, there's a verse, Sukadeva Goswami says, Jiva Kosha Dvashta. The Jiva Kosha was destroyed. Now there's a whole thing, it's very difficult to understand the purport of that thing, but the point is that a pure devotee doesn't have this Jiva Bhuta tendency. It's not conditioned. So the pure devotee is in his eternal relationship with Krishna. And then all these conditioned souls are saying, am I eternally conditioned? Am I eternally liberated? So I had an experience which kind of helped me a bit with this one. One time I had a dream, and in the dream there was a race, something like the Olympic Games was going on. And you know how people get so kind of into the whole thing, and who's going to win? And this one's winning, and then the other one's ahead, and then the other one's ahead. It's like, oh my God, who's going to win? Who's going to win? I was like that in the dream. Who's going to win? Who's going to win? And then suddenly something happened, and I woke up before the race finished. But, you know, you don't wake up completely, do you? You're kind of half awake, half asleep. So I was awake enough to see. It's just a dream. It didn't even exist. But I was asleep enough to still have a real attachment to try and find out who won that race. So I was lying there looking at myself, thinking, this is an interesting position to be in, because I know it didn't exist, it's just a dream. But I have this burning desire to know who won that race. But the race never existed. So it's something like that. There's in the Quest for Enlightenment, on page 57, Prabhupada discusses this issue, and he uses the example of a dream. He says it's like, he says the material world is like a dream for the living entity. So in the dream, we're trying to find out all the answers to the dream. But when we're awake, it's just a dream. It doesn't exist at all. So that's what's being explained in that verse, Sadasad Rupaya Chaso, that he's created the energies of cause and effect. So because we're all absorbed in cause and effect, we have to perennially go on asking questions which just solidify our ignorance. Every time we get an answer for the question, then we get 10 more questions, and it solidifies our ignorance. So we say that questions are a sign of intelligence, which is true. In one sense, it shows that a person's alert and awake and following what's going on. But actually, questions are a sign of ignorance, because questions only exist in the field of cause and effect. Questions in terms of like these, in terms of tattva. Now, in terms of like, it's different when devotees are discussing questions and answers, discussing Krishna's pastimes. That's transcendental relationship. But these type of questions, fundamental questions of my existence, it means we're in ignorance. So then he goes on to say, Te abhilasite shve shugane shuganavani va anta pravishta abhati vijnane na vitrimbataha. After creating the material substance, the Lord, Vasudev, expands himself and enters into it. And although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he is always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. So he's explained how the material world is manifested from Vasudeva's energy. Now, how do we end up here? What are we? What is our position? He's explaining that Krishna himself enters into the material world, and simultaneously, he appears to be bewildered by the material energy, but at the same time, he's also fully enlightened. So this means the expansion of the Atma, the part and parcel, becomes Jiva, and Vasudeva himself, Krishna himself, expands to take the form of Paramatma. So although the two are one, the two are also two, and when they're manifest in this world, Krishna is always enlightened as Paramatma. He's always enlightened in the absolute truth. But the spark, the part and parcel of Krishna, is bewildered and becomes covered by the modes of nature. Then Yatahya Bahitoban here Darush Vekas Fayonishu Nane Bhavati Vishvatma Bhuteshu Chatata Puman. The Lord as Supersoul pervades all things, just as fire permeates wood. And so he appears to be of many varieties, though he is the absolute one without a second. So this example is very interesting, because you have so many different types of wood, so many different shapes, but when you throw them on the fire, they all become fire. Anybody who likes burning stuff, any pyromaniacs will know that fire is fire. And if anybody wants to put out a fire, pretty much the fire is a fire. You know, if you want to put it out, you don't go, that's a different type of wood, or that was a chair. You have to put that out differently than a table. Because the fire is in the wood. Fire is in the wood. And although the wood takes different forms, the fire doesn't take different forms. So, again, our ignorance, we look around and we see so many different forms. But actually, there's only one form. It's Vishnu inside. Vishnu inside. And the soul is inside. And Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the chapter 13, text 20, another evidence, all transformations and variety in respect to living entities are due to the body. As far as spirit is concerned, living entities are all the same. All the same. So one of the ways in which we're all the same is that we're all individuals. Because everyone's an individual, so therefore everyone's the same, because everyone's an eternal individual. But by being eternal individuals, we're actually all the same. And the Paramatma in the heart is the same. There's one Paramatma. So our ignorance means we see things differently. Our spiritual realization means we see how everything is one in truth. But within that oneness, there's still distinction. But that distinction cannot be understood by jiva. That distinction comes naturally from Atma, Sat Chit Ananda. So there's so many arguments that, like, even the thing of, like they say, I don't want to make offenses. It's just like what I see. But we have an argument: can women be gurus? Can women be gurus? And we have a whole debates and discussions on Shastra and on and on, da 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 da. And the thing is, such ignorance. Because if you think you're hearing from a woman, or if you think you're hearing from a man, you're not qualified to be a disciple. Because disciple means at least you should have a certain degree of spiritual understanding. Tam sarva bhuta hridayam munimanato smi. In the 12th canto, Krishna explains that the transmission of transcendental knowledge is Krishna in the heart speaks. Krishna in the heart speaks, and Krishna in the heart of the listener hears. And he gives a whole lineage. Brahma spoke to Narada. Krishna in Brahma's heart spoke to Krishna in Narada's heart. Krishna in Narada's heart spoke to Krishna in Vedavyasa's heart. Krishna in Vedavyasa's heart spoke to Krishna in Sukadeva Goswami's heart. Krishna in Sukadeva Goswami's heart spoke to Krishna in Maharaj Parikshit's heart. Now the reason why it worked very well for them is because they were qualified speaker and qualified hearer, which means the designations are not getting in the way of the pure transmission. But for us, because we have so many attachments and aversions and designations, the message is not fully clear. It's not fully clear coming out, and it's not fully clear going in. But something is there, so that's why we feel something. But if we have an argument about the transmission, like guru-disciple means the transmission of transcendental knowledge, and then we have an argument and a discussion about the form of life that a living entity has to be in, it's just, you know, okay, I mean, you can talk from a point of sociology or culture or etiquette, or if you're into all that, but that's not our business, actually. Prabhupada made it very clear in the class yesterday, our business is to come to the pure level of bhakti, which has nothing got to do with the body or the mind. So if we're having these discussions, it means that this avidya is inside quite strongly. Because the transmission of it's Krishna is flowing. That's the whole idea. So then the next verse, aso gunamayar bhavar bhuta sukshmendriyatmibi swanirmiteshu nirvishlo bhungte bhuteshu tad gunan. The super soul enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature and causes them to enjoy the effects of those modes by the subtle mind. So because of our subtle mind, we're bewildered by the modes of nature. So we're seeing in terms of male, female, old, young, you know, all these different designations, because we're influenced by the modes of nature. But that's not our actual position, but we're locked up. How do we get out from this situation? That's today's verse. The Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by demigods, men, and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the modes of pure goodness. So, if were it not for the Lord manifesting himself, then in this world, we wouldn't have access to the Lord's pastimes. And without access to the Lord's pastimes, we wouldn't have the opportunity to become reestablished in our real position. And the Lord manifests, he can manifest in any form of light. Sukadeva Goswami replied to his father in a form of a tree. But then we have our conception about how a guru should be, what form he should, like Krishna spoke to Bibhaspan, he spoke to the sun god. So why can we not take knowledge from the sun, you know? Because of our conditioning, we've got our conceptions. We think, oh, well, you should speak English because I don't speak any other language. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden, transcendental knowledge is restricted by language now. You know, whereas Dakshinamurti was instructing, Lord Shiva in his form of Dakshinamurti was instructing the form of Kumaras in transcendental knowledge through silence. He was just sitting there, and in silence, transcendental knowledge was flowing. Because it's called Para, Pashanti, Madhyama, Vaigari, four levels of sound vibration. What's happening now is Vaigari, the physical gross sound that's coming out from the mouth. But before that, there's Para. And then when Para is, it's transcendental sound, it's spiritual sound. So when we chant Hare Krishna, the idea is that that's, it should be Para Shabda, should be transcendental sound. But then when that transcendental sound begins to flow through the modes of nature, through the mind, through the intelligence, it becomes polluted with different concepts of duality. And then it transforms into Pashanti, then Madhyama in the mind, and then it comes out as Vaigari. And we think that that's sound. So when the spiritual master comes to speak to me, he has to speak in a language I understand. He has to speak English. And he has to tick all my boxes that what a guru should be. You know, he should be like this, he should be like that. But then Sukadeva Goswami spoke through the trees. So how do you explain that, you know? So Para Shabda, transcendental sound, there's no obstacle to transcendental sound, which is why Prabhupada says so often that when we're chanting Hare Krishna, the sound vibration fills the entire universe. Lord Chaitanya's chanting filled the entire universe. Why? Because the entire universe is contained within transcendental sound. We think, oh, I'm here, and then the whole universe is massive. But the universe is just one aspect of transcendental sound. You know, it's only because of our preconceived conceptions that we have all these ideas. So anyway, there are different incarnations for different ages, and each incarnation gives different methods appropriate to the people of that time. So our incarnation in this age, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, our process is Harinam Sankirtan. So in order to attain to Krishna consciousness, and in order to be able to understand something of the philosophy, and in order to make advancement in Krishna consciousness, we have to chant the holy names. We have to do Harinam Sankirtan. And Harinam Sankirtan can be understood in so many ways. Like, Sankirtan means Samyak Purnam Kirtan, chanting that which is eternally pure. So chanting, that's why we chant on beads also. We're not together, but we're chanting on our own on beads, because Samyak Purnam means chanting the name, chanting that sound which is completely perfect, which is Krishna's names. But Sankirtan also means congregational chanting, and that's our process for this age. If we don't do that, then what's going to change? What's going to change? We have to, you know, on a practical level, we have to do something. We have to go and do Harinam Sankirtan. And even better than Harinam Sankirtan is Harinam Sankirtan with devotees doing books and distributing prasadam. And even better than just going on Harinam Sankirtan is to go on Harinam Sankirtan for ages, like all day long. And even better than that is to just forget about all the other stuff. It's like, what do we say? Not forget about it, but, you know, put it in its proper place, subordinate to, as a support system. I've gone over time, sorry, but I'll just one thing. Just one thing. Institutions. I want to say, just a personal thing about institutions. I work in the fire brigade. So it was noted at one point in history that, right, you need some method for putting out fires, because fires happen, so you need people there with access to water and equipment, so you can spray a load of water on that fire so the fire doesn't spread and we don't have another Great Fire of London. That's the idea, right? London's a big place, so then you have to have some strategic locations for fire stations. Once you have a number of fire stations with strategic locations and you're dealing with lots of people involved, well, then you need a HR department, don't you? And you need an admin department, and you need so much bureaucracy. And it's built up to such a degree now, the bureaucracy is built up to such a degree that that frontline fire service, this is just an example from my own experience, frontline fire service is seen to be something of a burden to the administration of the fire brigade. it becomes like that, because it's like, oh God, oh, firemen fighting, and then all the stations cost loads of money, and then all these problems, and it's just a botheration. We're trying to balance the books here, you know? And that's the nature of institutions. You have a function, you have a purpose, and then to support that function, you build up an institutional framework around it to support that function. But when it grows to a certain size, the institution loses sight of the purpose the institution is for. It fails to recognize that it's subordinate to that function, and then the whole thing is lost. So did Prabhupada come here to set an institution? Like, what was the point of him setting up an institution? Was to propagate Harinam Sankirtan and to propagate his books. So if we fall into this institutional rot where we think that just to maintain the institution is the important thing, it's not. The institution is there to support the primary activities of the institution. And if we're not doing that, then what's the use of, you know, what did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati say? You should sell the marble, wasn't it? Print books. Huh? Strip the marble. Sell it. Do something useful. What's the point? The point of our life is to chant the holy names and go back to Godhead. Shiva Bhagavatam Mahapuranam Ki Jai. Shiva Prabhupada Ki Jai.